This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And I want to say a special hello to the mayor of Clearwater, who I hope will be on my anniversary program, because it is coming up to the fourth anniversary of Joy on Paper, and it's very exciting for me, and I'm going to have some of my very, very favorite authors back, and two of them are Tasha Alexander and Andrew Grant. They are a husband and wife team. They each write absolutely different books. Tasha writes lovely, cozy romances, and Andrew writes thrillers. But I'm going to have them on together, and we're going to talk about their work because they are both delightful. And I have some other favorites coming on also, including Irene Goodman, who is a literary agent, and she was my very first guest. And because today is the end of February, and starting tomorrow, every month, Irene has an auction for a critique. If you are interested in getting really one of the best critiques ever, you can join with her in the auction. All you have to do is go to IreneGoodman.com and bid on the critique. And when you get it, if you win, she will do a critique, not only about the work itself, but she will tell you about what's going on in the publishing world, where she feels your work will fit in, what her recommendations are for you to make it better so that perhaps she or someone else will pick you up as a client. So the auction starts tomorrow. It starts on the first of every month, and it's well worth the investment. And of course, all the money goes to charity, particularly for her charities. Her two favorite charities are for people who have difficulty reading because they have diseases of the eye, and also hard of hearing. So please consider it and go to IreneGoodman.com. Well, I'm really happy today. As everyone knows, I love having people in the studio, and I have two guests in the studio today. At the bottom of the hour, Sue Kochman will be joining me, and I was thinking a lot about her this morning because she wrote a book called This and That, and I had one of those This and That kind of days today. Her book is a children's book called Mason's This and That Day, where she encourages children to just do what they feel like doing and learn from that experience, and not you know, have every minute of their day planned. That's how my day started. I've been doing all sorts of things today. But now I have in the studio with me, and I'm so happy to welcome Alan Ron. Hi, Alan.
Well, thank you, Patsy, and thanks for having me on your show.
Well, I think it's just fantastic. Alan, you can tell people your age.
Well, I'm 89.
89. And Alan has now written, you have three books published, right? And
no, I have nine books.
Nine books published. Well, I've got three of them. So I am so very, very happy to have you on, because one of the things, as you know, I encourage everybody that there has to be a book, in at least one book in you. And in Alan's case, wow, he's got nine, and I think another one coming on the way, right?
I'm working on another one. I'm not sure whether it'll get finished or not.
But we'll see. Well, Alan is amazing, and a lovely variety of work that he's been doing. The first one I finished was Bottom of the Barrel. And it's a collection of miscellaneous, unconnected ramblings of a rambling, unconnected mind. That's very, very good.
That's my latest one.
I really enjoyed it because there's a, we'll come back to this in a little while, because there's poetry in it, and everybody knows I love poetry. So I want to talk to you about this.
Okay.
But let's talk about the book that I think you sort of started off with, the one about the haunted house. How did you get involved in writing this story? How did you find a haunted house? And the house is called the book is called The House on Butcher Road.
Correct. Yes. Well, in 1965, this house came up for sale. A big Victorian house. It was built in 1896, and it was a beautiful place. Very formal. Had formal gardens. And my wife and I had lived in the house that I had built for 12, 13 years, and we decided it was time to get something a little bigger. And it was bigger. It was 16 huge rooms, a formal library, a formal dining room, had fireplaces.
Wow.
It was a beautiful place.
My kind of place.
But it didn't take us long to find out that it was haunted. And there was a presence in the house. My two daughters hated the place. They were young. They were 10 and 13, roughly. And they hated the place. One night, my oldest daughter woke up screaming, and she said there was two women standing at the foot of her bed. And then half of the upstairs was an apartment, and we had a renter up there, a young girl, and we were gone for the weekend, and when we got back, she said that she was sitting in her house, in her apartment, and she heard somebody walking in the attic. And she heard him start down the stairs and fall. And she ran out, got the neighbor next door, and he came over, flashlight and gun, and he couldn't find anybody. But and other people. We went back years later and talked to the new owners. And we didn't mention it. She brought it up. The new owner brought it up. She said, did you ever feel there was somebody else in the house? And I said, oh, yeah, all the time. We never felt threatened. But you always had the feeling there was somebody watching you or somebody was there and that wasn't there.
So all this got your mind roiling and boiling?
So I started kind of putting some things down on paper, and I wrote some little short stories and some short stories about things that went on in town. And I had quite a collection of them, and I tried several times to put them together in the form of a book, and it never seemed to work. So I joined the Inspiring Writers.
Aspiring Writers are inspiring. Aspiring Writers is with the out of Largo Library.
At the Largo Community Center.
Largo Community Center. They are aspiring writers, and they are inspiring, and they are inspired by a wonderful woman named
Angela Pistaro.
Well, she has done wonders with you. So you went there with this idea for the book about a haunted house.
Yes, see if I could figure out a way to see if she could help me put this book together. And in the meantime, from ideas that occurred in the class, from little exercises we did, I ended up by writing 8 other stories and had them published.
And then, but gradually the book came around to...
I ended up by letting the author, actually the author goes back to the town and teams up with one of the old-time members in town, and they tell the story. The old-timer tells the story, and it reverts back to the happenings in the town. It seemed to work.
Uh-huh. And so the original home, how much did you base your book on the original owners of the original?
Well, it's based on the house and the town.
Yeah. Yeah. And what did you find out about this house?
I'm not sure what you mean.
Well, who had built it?
It was built by two ladies. Uh-huh. And they are featured in the story.
They are featured in the story.
They're the owners of the house, yes. And all the characters in the book are really characters in the town, people in the town.
So that's a wonderful way to do it.
And several of the incidents in the book actually happened.
Whoa! When my boys were young, I made a point of taking them to hotels that were haunted, mm-hmm. like Jekyll Island.
Right.
Been mm-hmm. isn't that mm-hmm. lovely? That lovely old hotel there on Jekyll Island, and of course, they were young and they were excited.
Yeah, there's a haunted house up in Chautauqua, up in northern Florida, too.
Yeah, I think it's a wonderful experience for young people. although I guess your daughter didn't appreciate actually living 24/7.
Yes, it makes a difference.
It makes a difference. Yes, I think it's different than from going to a hotel. So how long did you work on the book? Then you wrote with.
Well, that was a long. This book is a long time coming. The House on Butcher Road. It was a long time coming.
And it's so exciting when now you started really like your serious writing started. You've been writing on and off all your life, I guess, but serious writing started when you retired.
Yes, I always kept a journal. I've always kept a journal, which I think helps. And I didn't get serious about writing until I retired, and then I decided I'd try to get this book put together.
And you did, and it's very inspiring when you see somebody who has, you know, all of you people out there who are working and you're looking forward to, you know, your retirement years, think about writing a book because it really helps. I think it helps with your mind. It keeps you mm-hmm. young in mind because you have to do the research, you have to read, you have to just come out with these ideas. And there's been a lot of research that, our brains are filled with all these neurons. And these neurons, these electronic neurons, have to keep sort of working, bouncing around in there. And they don't, they tend, if you use the same, if you think about the same thing over and over, or you watch the same television show over, it's not using anything new. It's not like percolating in there.
Right.
And certainly, I'm sure when you were working on this, you had so many things happening in your head.
Well, it starts out in Titusville, Pennsylvania, so I had to go online and research the oil industry in Titusville, how that started up.
Uh-huh.
And then it ends up in Buffalo for a while, Buffalo, New York, and I did some research on that. And,
so it was a lot of fun. I love the research part of writing. You didn't like it?
I do it if I have to.
Uh-huh. And then when you sort of got the book done, you read it to your group? Did your group read it?
The
Before
entire
you published
book?
It? Yeah.
No. I had I have two daughters that both read it, uh-huh. and another friend that read it and made their corrections in it. I realize that it's not properly edited by a proper editor like you're supposed to do. But I grew up during the Depression, and I have a tendency to do things on the cheap. So I design my own covers, and I usually have several people read over and make corrections in it.
Well, this is what I've been telling people for a long time. You don't have to have a professional editor. You know, there are ways around it if you have people
right.
in your family or friends or a group that you work with, a writing group, that they will help you and they will help you get it in shape. So the wonderful thing about writing is once you start, it's really addictive, isn't it? You want to
yes,
get
it
these
is.
Words.
Yes, it
you,
is.
You just, there's so many ideas and thoughts that are in your head and you want to just get them out there. And it's not always perfect the first time when you start writing. I'm sure you edited yourself many times.
So, yeah, some days you can't get down. You can't get all the thoughts on paper. They're coming so fast. Other days you can't find a thought.
Well, but that's the exciting thing about writing. And this program, as I always introduce it, it's about writers and those who dream of writing. Don't just be a dreamer. Be like Alan. Alan did it. He sat down and he did it. And Because now you type it yourself, or
yes,
yeah, mm-hmm. Okay. But I've had authors here who wrote it by hand, or even dictated it to their wives, because there are stories that are in your head that you want to share, that you want to save, and I'm sure your family is so happy that you've done this.
Well, they've have a copies of everything.
I'm sure. And, of course, it's fun for you to go to book shows and events and yep. sign and be asked for your autograph. You know, it's a,
you always meet
kick.
And you meet so many other authors, too.
And that aren't they always... Other authors are so supportive. This is
yes.
one of the things, you know, when I talked to Mary Higgins Clark, she said the most wonderful thing for her over the years, you know, she's written so many bestsellers, she's written so many books. What she loves the most is the support she gets from fellow writers, that they say, you know, we're looking forward to your book. We want you to write more. And I think that happens with you.
Yes, Tim McGee actually gave me your name.
Oh, yeah. And, well, I
know
love
he's been on your show.
I love Tim McGee. He's written a book that I feel should be, well, I would love.
Yes.
I think it's a wonderful book. I hope, as a matter of fact, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I hope that he enters it in the Writer's Digest contest for self-published authors. And the deadline is April 1st. Tim McGee's Worthy McGuire is one of my favorite books. I think it is a brilliant book.
It's an excellent story.
The story is excellent.
Very believable.
Believable, just unexpected in so many ways, so many little twists and turns. His characters are beautifully done, and I just love this book so much. As a matter of fact, I would love to see it as a film. So I hope that Tim will enter it, because you never know. In the Writer's Digest contest, it is a wonderful contest because the readers are all really professional people. And I think if he gets it in front of the right professional people, this book should be reissued by a major publisher.
Yes, I think so too.
It's about a man who goes back to Normandy, about D-Day. This is one of those books that could be sold forever.
It's a World War II vet that goes back to France.
But with lots of twists and turns and a lot of unexpected events and wonderful characters. So I'm so glad you mentioned him, because I want people to read his book. And I think everyone out there, you know, you're looking for inspiration. Get Alan Ron's books. I think the House on Butcher Road is a great example of a book that you have a story in you. Find it and do the research and write it. And then he has these smaller books, which came about as a result of exercises that you were given in your writer's group.
Right.
And I want to tell you, I think that Angela is absolutely amazing. She has gotten... she's very clever, and I want to just read one of the poems, because I got such a kick out of this. And this is, sometimes people say, well, I can't write, I don't know how to write, I don't know where to start, what should I do? Join a group. Be inspired by an aspiring writer's group, like Alan was, and get in there, and just, once the words... You start putting words on paper. It's like an addiction. You just want to see more and more. At some point, you sit back and you say, "My goodness, did I write that?" Are you sometimes surprised?
Yes, I go back and read my stuff, and I say, "That's not bad."
Yeah, that's not bad. And there's one particular poem I just love in this book. I like them all. You wrote for your great granddaughter. You wrote for your wife. All of these are very touching. And this book is called Bottom of the Barrel. I really suggest that everybody out there get this, because first of all, you'll get a kick out of it. And there's this poem. I'm going to read it. It's called Under Pressure. And Angela at the aspiring writers class gave the class an assignment, and she said, use the words hopscotch, jacks, and ball. Hopscotch, jacks, and ball. In a poem. Well, you know, that could... For a lot of people, you just sort of, your mind goes blank for a moment. Like, what am I going to do?
Absolutely.
Those are crazy words. Who's thought of the hopscotch for years, right? But Alan wrote a poem that I hope that they pick up and put in a poetry anthology, because this is really cute. What do you write with pen in hand when no thought comes to mind? A poem, she asks, I want from you. I find it quite unkind. A children's verse, a children's ode, about hopscotch, jacks, and ball. The class has taken an ugly turn. I'm not satisfied at all. But I'll struggle through, jot something down, and hope it will get better. If not, I fear the next I'll write will be my goodbye letter. That is so good. I think that is so good. And there are so, I could sit here actually and read a whole bunch of them. I don't have time. But as a matter of fact, what I'm going to do, I'm going to have Angela back.
Okay.
I'm going to have Angela, but I want you to come on the program with her.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
You will come on with her, and we will read more of this poetry.
Okay.
Because I think it is so clever, and the time has gone so fast, and I don't have a lot of time to do this, but I want, again, to tell people, if you're thinking, if you're dreaming of writing, just start with this book, bottom of the barrel, and you will be inspired. And Ellen, I want to thank you so much for being in today and coming here to talk about this. And I'm going to talk to Allison, and soon, sometime in March, we're going to have you two back in here. And I'll get to read some more of the poetry, because I love it. I just love it.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And so there are the... How do people... Do you have a website, or you just do Facebook?
To Facebook, yes.
Okay. But the books are available online.
And I do have a website, yes.
Yeah.
It's Alan Ron, www.alanron.com.
So, got to get out there. Authors have to promote their website. And Ron is spelled R-A-U-N, and we learned that it's...
Danish,
yes. Danish name, Danish. Unusual, R-A-U-N. I wasn't sure when I saw. So, Alan Ron... Get this book. Get the bottom of the barrel. Get the other one. I think The House on Butcher Road will be fun for everybody who loves ghosts, and we all do. And then The Reluctant Hero has more action. Yeah, I was going to say it's mafia. And I like your character, Samantha. Oh, this is a good story. So I'm going to have you back.
Okay, thank you.
I'm going to have you back very soon, because I could read all the poems. I spend my whole hour. So again, Alan, thank you for coming in to see me today at Joy on Paper. And everybody, get one of at least one, and I get all three of them, because Alan, you've done a terrific job.
Thank you, Patsy. Okay. Thanks for having me.
Okay, and you'll be back soon. Okay, we're going to take a commercial break, and then I'll be back with Sue Kutchman, because I'm having a this and that day, but I'm all set. Okay, thanks again, Ellen.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660, or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell, or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers' clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead, and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers. I'm back. What am I saying? I'm back here with Sue Kochman in the studio with me. I am so happy. Sue Kochman.
Yes, ma'am.
It's so nice to have you back. I love your book, Mason's This and That Day. And I was telling people at the beginning of the program that I've had one of those this and that days. I'm getting ready to go up to Wisconsin to see my son next week. And so I'm like doing a lot of different things. And that's what Mason's This and That Day is about. Letting Mason just do his thing. I was watching for dolphins. I was writing. I was organizing my clothes. And then out of the clear blue sky, I decided I have to make a Finnish pancake. Have you ever had a Finnish pancake?
No.
This is an amazing thing. A Finnish pancake is baked in the oven. It's a humongous thing. I mean, it can fill your oven when it starts growing. It is a pancake where you just melt the butter in a dish until you have this big dish full of sizzling butter, real butter. Not no phony stuff, real butter. And then you pour the batter on top of it. It's a very liquid batter, and then it just blows up. Like you know, you've seen I Love Lucy, where she has this bread that blows up and gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Well, that's a Finnish pancake. It gets big and big and big and big and big, and you look at it through the window, and you say, oh, it's so big, it's going to blow up the oven. And then, but when you take it out, it actually falls flat, but it's so beautiful, and mine was just gorgeous. So,
how many people does this Finnish pancake serve?
Technically speaking, a Finnish pancake the size of the dish I use, which is a big flat dish that practically fills the oven, should feed 8 to 10 people.
Wow.
It feeds three.
And that's how delicious it is.
It is so good. I'm going to put a picture on my Facebook page today because this one, they always look beautiful, but this one was just humongous. It was so beautiful. So I've had a wonderful this and that day. So how about you?
I've had a wonderful this and that morning also, and it's going to continue until 6 o'clock tonight.
Yeah.
It's one of those days where I'm running here and there.
Because you are up to something wonderful.
I am. I'm always trying to be involved in something wonderful.
Yes. And now we have a book, and it's hardback.
Yes. This new book of mine, School Dazed, comes in hardback and softback.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Love the illustrations.
Isn't it?
The artist is the same artist that did Mason's This and That Day. I've had so many people just love the illustrations.
I did. The first time I saw Mason's This and That Day, I said, oh, I love this illustrator.
Yes, she's wonderful. She's from Australia, and I think she's brilliant. She, like, gets in my head.
And, yeah, and she knows exactly what
you want. And she knows exactly what I want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love the dedication. It said, I would like to thank God for the ideas in this book and dedicate it to all children who share the joy of reading. Now, Sue Kochman will give a little background about why she likes children. She's been involved with them long enough.
Yes, I have spent 32 years of my career in elementary education. I was a teacher, a curriculum specialist, and then I retired as the principal of Madeira Beach Elementary right before it went fundamental. I retired early because I was sick, and it was a miracle that I'm even here today.
It is.
So I was given another purpose in life, I thank God, every day, and I thought that purpose is to get back to writing those books I always dreamed of writing.
And, you know, you are so amazing because we'll mention that you really had one of those terrible, terrible times in a person's life where you almost died.
Yes.
Everybody actually, I think, wrote you off. And you survived.
Yes.
Thank God. And I want to say something here. This is so funny. People, if you're watching on YouTube, you can see. Sue Kochman said, you worked 32 years with... She doesn't even look 32. I mean, like, she started when she was a baby. I mean, you look so good.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, you look amazing. Oh, it's beautiful just to look at you. And then you came out with this new book. And tell us about School Dazed. Why this subject? Why is this important to you?
School Dazed is important because there's three children involved in here. There's Carlos, there's Mia, and then there's Sam. Now, Sam probably rings a bell with you. Sam is my monkey character from another story.
That's right.
But Sam is not a monkey in this. It's a boy. And I did that on purpose because I'm playing around with the Sam monkey being trademarked, and I've got T-shirts and so on. So this is a story about some kids that are going to school, and Sam's got anxiety. He's afraid to go to school. He's worried. He has dreams at night. He worries about the cafeteria food being terrible, the teachers being mean. He worries about kids bullying him. He worries about everything. He fakes his sickness. And his mother, of course, being as keen as she is, knows he's faking, and he's just worried. So she gets him off to school. And long story short, they show up in a classroom where they have a lovely teacher. And I really love teaching and teachers. And I hope that the teachers out there will buy this book for their classroom, especially new teachers, because I even use an example in there of a classroom behavior plan that I used to use in part when I was a teacher that really works. So the whole framework of the book is basically set up in a classroom. And if you look at the illustrations, you can see a chart of the behavior plan. You can see hanging in with a good book, an idea for a reading corner. You can, when the teacher talks about the class rules, teachers can really use those class rules today. So as I tied in a lot of my experiences through these three kids. It's just really another heartwarming story about friendship again, too, and how sometimes our imaginations as children go away with us into some other la-la land, which Sam did. And school did not turn out as bad as he thought. And I also tied in a poetry piece in there. The teacher writes a poem to her class. And it uses a lot of adjectives to describe people. And it's in alphabetical order. So there's a couple of skills in here that I want teachers to be able to use as a springboard to lessons. I've got adjectives, I think, that need to be important. Yeah, I like that one, too. She's looking at a picture.
I'm
really
looking
cute
at a picture. It's called Hanging Out with a Good Book. Well, that's my name.
And Sam has glasses. The monkey character has glasses in there. The monkey character in this book happens to be the school mascot. So if I have people that call in today, I actually have T-shirts that I would like to give to maybe five callers today.
Oh, my. Oh.
With the Sam on it. So any little bit of marketing going on today, too, I guess. I'm trying to tie things together.
Wow.
So anyway, it just depends on what, you know, people feel like they want to do. But School Dazed is really a really good story, I think, for the first day of school. I'm hoping I meant to get it out earlier this year, but publishing stuff came along and we couldn't get it out on time. So it just came out 2 weeks ago, but I'm really wanting to push it for every teacher to have it for a book of the month for in the beginning of the school year.
Oh,
I think it would be perfect. And it's really good. It's a good read aloud. I deliberately wrote it for 15, 20 minutes for a teacher to read aloud and or students can read it. Perfect for second and third grade without a problem.
Well, I think it's wonderful. And people have heard me talk about my third grade teacher. And that's why I so admire teachers who really understand the impact that they make on the lives of children. I had a horrific third grade teacher, the worst. And I hope that it is a lesson to all of you teachers out there, what terrible things you can do to a child.
Yes.
Because my third grade teacher didn't want me to write with my left hand. I'm serious.
Don't tell me she smacked you with a ruler or something.
No, she made me sit on my left hand.
Oh.
Yes, and I had to learn to write with my right hand. It was terrible. I mean, this was awful. I don't think we have teachers like that anymore.
No, I don't think we could get away with it. If we did, they wouldn't last very long.
Yeah. But teachers, you are so important. And the wonderful thing, I have had so many authors on who really credit their success and their ability to see goodness in themselves, because so many times children think, oh, I can't do this. I'm not good enough. I'm not. But all it takes is one teacher somewhere along the line to say, wow, you've done a great job. Wow, you can make it. You can do all these wonderful things.
And give you the confidence you need.
It is. And, you know, I had Juan Felipe Herrera, who is, well, he's not the current one, but he was the U.S. Poet Laureate. And he's Hispanic. And you can imagine when he went to school, he was one of these kids who was teased and bullied. And, of course, he had an accent, something that kids could make fun of. But he had a third grade teacher who said, Juan, you can write a poem. And from that day forward, with her support and with her encouragement and his mother's love, who really would tell him all these poems in the night, all these magical stories as they laid under the stars, and then he would transform them into poems for his teacher.
How beautiful is that?
And it was so wonderful that she is still alive, and she managed to, she lived long enough to see one of her students become the Poet Laureate of the United States.
That's awesome.
This is what a teacher can do when they have this right attitude. And so that's why I admire your book so much, because you have this love for children that comes through your books, and this joy of learning. It's fantastic.
Yes, and I really want kids to have that same joy. I worry that they're on the computers too much and they're not enjoying the books and the pictures and rereading the same stories. And I want books to become interactive with the kids. And that's part of the reason why I always enjoyed elementary school, because we used to do enrichment, story, adventures, dioramas, all kinds of activities that went around a book. And unfortunately now they are being tested for so many things that they don't maybe have as much time to enjoy books other than read the one that they're told that they have to read.
Exactly.
And that's where I'm coming from. I'm still coming from that lifelong learning enrichment, love to read, and share quality time with your kids. How many times do you read a story and you sit there and you giggle and you laugh and you have so much fun?
And this is so important, because really, I know that, the idea of this testing has gone really crazy. Kids should not learn words based on a list that they need to know. Words should come naturally through stories.
And descriptive paragraph writing.
That they read over and over. And like with your book, and recently I had BJ Lee, who also uses words in books that, children should know, but it's not on a list. Mm-hmm. it's just part of the reading and part of that process, and it goes into their whole psyche this mm-hmm. way. Mm-hmm. And you do a beautiful job. And I do love to look at Sam, the monkey Sam, because he is cute. I love to see his face there. And this whole idea of, tell us about this no monkey business in class. How do you explain this?
It's basically behavior. No fooling around in school. And so you go to school to learn. And so in the book, I put a list, like it says no but monkey business in class. And it's the teacher's class rules. Like, for example, it says we respect each other. That's rule number one. Rule number two, we are always polite and use kind words. Number three, we listen carefully when someone is speaking. Number four, we look at the speaker. A lot of times kids can't make eye contact when they're talking to you anymore. And they need to learn how to do that, especially so they understand what the person is saying. And the next one would be, we keep our hands and feet and objects to ourselves. When we see or hear about something dangerous, we tell the teacher. We're living in a time where kids need to see and say. It's very, very important. It's not being a tattletale when it's safety involved. And then we turn in our work on time. These are basics for a school teacher to use in a classroom that will really make her class run very, very smoothly.
And if they learn this at a young age, if they start off the right way, then by the time they get to high school, it's so often you hear stories now in where kids absolutely ignore the teacher in high school.
Yes,
they sit
it's very
there with their
sad.
Phones, which and they're texting half the time in class. Mm-hmm. And this is not right. And we need this kind of background for the children, just mm-hmm. I feel like kids aren't calm enough. You know, there's this, they're always on the go, and like with the phones, and like with the texting, and it's repetitive, the same thing over and over, that their minds aren't being
they're
opened
racing.
Up.
They're racing. Yeah. They're racing to some certain specific things, and that's it.
That's it.
I was just using this example the other day to someone. We were talking about a dictionary. And, you know, nowadays all the kids have to do, if they don't know the definition of a word, they just Google it. And boom, it's there in, what, 2 seconds or something? And it's right there. And I thought, yeah, but listen to all the... Think about all the skills that they're losing when they do that. Number one, you're going to open the dictionary. You're using your hands, right, to open the dictionary, your fine motor skills. You're looking for the guide words at the top of the page. You're running alphabetical order, the process, in your head so you can find the word on the correct page by using the guide words. There's a lot of skills involved in that. We used to teach that in school. I don't think that's being taught anymore either.
No.
Because it can just be 1, 2, 3, boom, Google it.
Yeah, it's not the same. I really recommend to parents, have a dictionary. I think one of the reasons that I'm such a great reader, my sister, who, as you know, is called the connoisseur of cozy mystery, she reads every cozy mystery, is that we had, as when I was a child, we had one of those big Webster's dictionary on a stand. And it was very funny. My parents won this dictionary in a dance contest.
Wow.
They could have won the first prize, which was a trophy. But my mother wanted the dictionary.
Yeah.
So she made sure that they got the second prize, which was this wonderful dictionary. And I spent so many wonderful hours going through that dictionary because you learn the words before it, after it, you start understanding where the words come from. I really feel sad for children who don't have that same excitement, where you had those tabs and my sister and I would just pick a letter,
yes,
any random letter,
and
just,
then start reading.
Yeah, just start reading at the top and go right down.
Yeah.
And you learn so much that way.
Yes, yes, you do. And you learn to speak better.
Oh, yes.
Your vocabulary is so improved. You know, your articulation with people, you're more educated, and it's so important. And I really do think I wish I could get some parents in a group and talk about the dangers of some of the time spent on the computer.
Yes.
Wouldn't that be a great workshop?
I think so. You really should. Well, with your books now, and you've done something here, tell us about this learning and loving it idea that you have now.
Yeah, Learning and Loving It is a book, 32-page book I just came out with. It's not, I don't even have the ISBN number yet. That it's in the process. But anyway, it's a book where I took my books, but I also took other stories from other authors that I loved when I was a teacher. And of course, I wander around in Barnes & Noble a lot, so I kind of keep up on a lot of the books. But what I did was I came up with activities, hands-on enrichment activities that you can do with books. One that sticks out in my mind is The Little Engine That Could. I know I can. Everybody remembers that story. I did it in a first grade classroom at Madeira Beach Elementary in Miss Tracy Emery's classroom. And what we did is we read the story, and then the kids had shoeboxes. And on front of the shoebox, they got to draw and color in the part of the train that was theirs. And on the front of it, the teacher colored and cut out the configuration of the engine of the train. And we put all these shoe boxes together, and it looked like a line of train around her classroom. It was so cute. And then the kids took cards, index cards, and they can write goals that they want to accomplish, whether it be a writing goal, a math goal, a reading goal, you know, something, maybe a goal even at help in the classroom. And they put the goals inside their specific little shoebox. And then I don't know if they followed through with this, but when they left, as they achieve their goals, they can punch them like a conductor would punch a hole, you know, in the ticket.
Uh-huh.
So it really turned out to be a cute activity. And it was such a cute display. And the kids were so, like, fired up about it. Actually, that one's on my Facebook.
Okay.
If people ever go to, you know, my Sue Kochman Facebook, that one's a little video on there. It's a little clip. But that's just an activity that we did with a whole group. But my Learning and Loving It book has easy activities. It has craft activities. There's when you can buy characters from the store that are not painted. Wooden characters,
yes.
And you paint them. And if it's the ugly duckling, then paint the beautiful swan. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
I just use so many. It's hard for me to think of all of them I've used in there. But it's just a matter of getting kids to do something fun after they've read the book. With Love from Grandpa, there's a lot of activities that go along with fishing. You can do the painting. You can roll the fish on the paper. You can do so many things.
Well, I think it's wonderful that you're writing these books, because the sort of the bigger your name in the community is, in the world of writing, the better the chance that you will be invited to speak to major groups of parents, where you can explain really the importance of taking your kids away from these phones, away from the electronics, because they're not learning. They're really not learning. The reading and the writing, encouraging them both to read. Now, I homeschool my boys. We, as a matter of fact, we had no idea of the sort of, I think now looking back on it, I was supposed to do something, but I never taught to a test, a state test. Mm-hmm. But they read constantly, mm-hmm. constantly. I mean, every minute of their day that they weren't doing, you know, some other activity, like, because we did homeschool group, but they were reading. And that was enough that when they went to take tests, when they took SAT tests, those words didn't upset them. They didn't have to study for, you know, I knew some girls in Sunday school, and one day I saw what they were doing, and they're getting ready for their pre-SAT, the first SAT, and they're studying these vocabularies, and they don't know these words. They've never seen the words in a sentence, and they're I thought, this is sad, because if they had just read, you know, read every Nancy Drew book, read every, you know, the words are there.
They would have had so much more exposure.
That's right. The words are there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's so important. So I think that you're doing a wonderful service by writing these books.
Thank you. And I do go to the schools, you know, and I'll do special events with parents. And I actually did a grandparent workshop, too.
Oh.
Yeah, which was nice, because my With Love from Grandma book. But I'm going to be having a celebration of Read Across America March 4th.
Okay, tell us about that.
That is going to be at the Seminole Library, Room A. And it's going to be from 6 to 8. And I'll have all my books there if people would like to purchase them. But I'm also going to set up a little craft table where I'm going to have journals for the kids, that they can take a journal home, but they get to decorate the cover. See, that's part of my interaction with all this. I want, you know, if I'm going to get kids to write, they have to have a journal that they feel special and close to.
Well, you know, my guest, just who was just here, he's 89 years old. Now, when he retired, he worked most of his life. He retired at 82, although he's still doing a little work on the side. But he kept a journal all of his life. And just that habit of writing down words, keeping little stories, then when, as a matter of fact, here I've got a few of his things where he's got stories that basically he had written down years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And now he went back, looked at his journals and said, oh, that's a cute story. That's something I did. And he put them together in a book.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one. Look, did you see him? He's so bright and vigorous.
He's bright-eyed and bushy-tailed,
he
I would say.
Absolutely delightful. And of course, he's written some beautiful poetry. So this is what we want. We want kids to write at a young age, read at a young age, and just fill their minds with so much knowledge naturally.
Mm-hmm. Not and the computers have their purpose.
Yeah,
I mean, they're
do.
Great for research and for other
that,
things.
But it's
for
not
when
great
they're
for
really
thinking.
Young.
It's not great for thinking,
yeah.
I tell you. It's
yeah.
not. It's not great for the imagination.
That's right.
And that's what we need.
And that's exactly what
and
we need.
And that's why all your hands-on activities are so great. So this event is March 4th from 6 to 8 at Seminole Library. 9,213th Street Seminole, lovely library, isn't
mm-hmm.
it?
Mm-hmm.
A great library.
Mm-hmm.
And snacks and prizes and art activities. And I think you're doing a great job.
Well, thank you. And I'm trying to invite teachers, too. I know this memo went out to a couple of the schools in Seminole, so I don't know if they'll have time to come enough. But that's.
I hope all you teachers get out there. You'll be... First of all, you will be inspired by Sue, because Sue is just, she's an inspirational
thank you.
Person.
Thank you.
She's overcome so much, and she has most handsome son, Casey Kochman. And everybody knows I love baseball, and of course, Casey is a great, great baseball player, and I'm waiting for him to come in here when he's ready to write a book. Huh?
It's up to him. Everybody's got their story to
tell,
right?
Well, I think Casey can write. I want Casey to write a book. That's my goal.
We'll let him know that.
Yeah. And then he can be a guest on Joy on Paper.
There you go.
And this, I'm so glad that you're here.
Thank you.
Because it's coming up to the 4th anniversary of Joy on Paper. And you've been one of my favorite guests.
Oh,
and
thank
you. I just love you. And I'm so really, as I said, because I was traumatized by my teacher. I look back and I think, oh, if only I had Sue.
Well, you know, I was a child too, and people would not believe me right now if I told you this, because I'm very social. But there was a time in my life when I was in elementary school, I was afraid to be called upon in the classroom.
Well, she's not.
Isn't that interesting? So I've had a lot of good teachers help bring me out of my shell.
Okay, well, they certainly have. And as I tell everyone, you know, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're really lucky, to one day hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a streaming video, a movie, a television series, or a cartoon. You never know. Sue's would be great for a cartoon. And just remember to say something nice to somebody today. And I will start by saying something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything. He's saluting me, and I'm saluting him. And I should have been a general, don't you think?
And thank you for having me here, Patsy. You're always so kind.
Oh, well, thank you. It's been a joy to see you.
And you as well.
Because you found the joy on paper.
I did.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye, everybody.